Welcome to the Young Turks, lovely Wednesday show after the 4th of July. I was going to say congratulations to all of you, like you passed the test or something. Anyway, fun 4th of July, although I ate a sub, which I consider to be American enough, but no hot dogs. And I did see fireworks, 2 out of 3, I'm going to count it. I also did a very patriotic video on YouTube, which you should check out. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about how jingoistic I am in the post game today. TYTnetwork.com/join. Free trial membership, by the way, this month. Write in promo code free TYT and get a month free. Okay, I've got a wild show for you guys today. I'm going to do the first segment here by myself. Then I'm going to bring in John Iadarola for the rest of the hour. Then I'm going to bring in Brent and Grace for the second hour. It's a Young Turks extravaganza, and the story that's got me really, really pissed. And in ways you might not necessarily expect, is the CNN so-called blackmail story. Did they try to blackmail someone online and perhaps dox them, okay? And then the fallout from that story. There's always, when I come back from a, you know, like a weekend like this where we had 4th of July, always come back and pissed at something. Anyway, all right, let me give you some stories right now. All right, quick story for you guys on CNN versus Donald Trump. They're doing polling on this now. SurveyMonkey did a poll and they asked who people trust most. It's published by Axios, by the way. CNN the winner, 50% saying that they trust CNN over Trump. Only 43% saying Trump over CNN. And we understand the CNN might be entering the primaries for 2020. Okay. Look, there's a lot of ways to take that. I'm going to get to the most important and optimistic note in this poll in a second. But my God, Hillary Clinton couldn't beat Donald Trump. CNN, which is not very well liked in the country, is beating Donald Trump. I know, apples and oranges, but still. Okay. Anyway, so you're not going to be surprised to find out that the divide is very partisan. 91% of Democrats find CNN to be more truthful than Trump. That is such a low bar, but good. That's, I don't know who the other 9% are. Anyway, while 89% of Republicans find Trump to be the more honest broker. No, you don't. Now look, there's a lot of problems with CNN, and I've done what, eight dozen videos criticizing CNN for different things, and I think they do have a bias. I don't think it's a conservative or liberal one. I think it's an establishment bias. They love the US government, they love the Democratic Party, they love the Republican Party. They don't love Donald Trump as much. He's not part of the establishment, although he has been helping them tremendously with his proposals so far. If you say you've got criticism of CNN, I'm right there with you, brother, okay? If you say the CNN quote unquote lies more than Donald Trump, come on, Republicans, you don't even believe that, okay? The guy lies at an unreal pace and you know it. Within a paragraph, within a sentence, he will say two diametrically opposing things. Both can't be true. You've seen it a million times, so I don't care how untrustworthy you think CNN is. Donald Trump, in this lesser of two evils, if you will, is way more untrustworthy. Okay, so that's my opinion. We've seen the opinion of Republicans and Democrats. Most importantly, what do independents think? Now, the reason this is really important, why I'm doing this story in the first place, is because there's this canard out there that independents are actually conservatives. They just don't want to call themselves Republicans. I don't know who came up with that, but I've never seen that to be true. I think independents, you know, there's a lot of good things to be said for them. They're more independent minded. That's wonderful. Some are low information voters. It's not so wonderful. They're like, I don't know, Republicans say give everything to the rich and the Democrats say something slightly different. I can't tell the difference. No, you should be able to tell the difference between Republicans and Democrats. They both have an enormous set of issues. I think one party has more issues, but either way, you can make a clear decision on it. So I'm not one to glorify independents like, oh my God, they know everything. But I'm also have been skeptical throughout that they're actually conservatives. It's like this mantra on TV, we're a center right country, we're a center right country, right? No, apparently not right. So how did independents come out in this poll? Independents backed CNN over the president by a 55-40 split. That's pretty damn good, man. That means independents by a 15-point margin, which is significant, saying that they're not buying what Trump is selling. The fact that it's versus CNN is not that important. You could put almost anything in there. In fact, CNN is apparently not that trustworthy for most of the American people. So when CNN is beating Donald Trump by 15 points among independents. That means not good news for Trump among independents. I know everybody thinks he won once and they won all those special elections in red districts, so it'll never catch up with him. You keep losing independents at that scale, my guess is it catches up with you. So just a little data point, but an interesting one, wanted to share it with you guys. Okay, all right, now let's move to this next story. So, this is a story about Republican tax hikes, and it has a significant twist at the end, a twist that I didn't see coming. First, let's share with you guys the standard stuff. So lately, the Trump cabinet, otherwise known as the swamp, has been saying that they are going to reduce taxes massively for the richest people in the country, and most importantly for corporations. So that part is not surprising, but I'll give you the depths of it, which might be surprising to some of you. Gary Cohn, who is their top economic advisor for Donald Trump, and Steve Mnuchin, who is his Treasury Secretary, aren't bluffing, Axios explains, when they say that they want to slash the corporate tax rate to 15% from the current 35%. Neither man has any interest in timid tax cuts, and they wager that special interests will relinquish their loopholes if they become convinced that their tax rate will really be in the teens. Yeah, I suspect that would be true of some, but not all. And then some folks are never going to like of the corn subsidy, the oil subsidies, all their different monopolistic subsidies that they have gotten from the government. But yeah, a 20-point drop, which is, of course, in reality, taking away more than 50% of the taxes that come from corporations. Of course, corporations will sign on to that. This is Republicanism 101, okay? Give everything to the powerful who are your donors. So the details are funny though. They're becoming far less wedded to revenue neutrality, the idea favored by House and Senate Republican leadership that tax cuts mustn't add to the deficit. I love that. What did I tell you? I've told you this 1,000 times. In fact, the reason I know it is because of a memo that was uncovered from the Nixon era. The Republicans' battle plan, and they do it every time, is when the Republicans are in office, say the deficits don't matter. Remember, Dick Cheney literally said that. And run up deficits like crazy. And as soon as you guys are out of office and Democrats in office go, oh my God, oh the deficits, what have you done with the deficits? Whatever you do, don't do anything that would spur the economy. So under Republicans, you spend more and you cut taxes. Well, that gives everything they want to their donor class. Plus, it could improve the economy because you're spending more, and then you make the Democrats spend less, and the economy does worse on their good. Which, by the way, doesn't turn out to be true anyway, because their tax cuts hurt the economy. But that's their battle plan, and here they are executing it. They're in the office, and immediately they're like, deficits. We don't have to be revenue neutral, do we? Who gives a damn about deficits? Goldman Sachs got to make some money, son. Okay, Cohn, who conveniently was the president of Goldman Sachs before he took the job as top economic advisor to Trump, has told associates that if tax reform doesn't get done this year, it's probably never going to happen. So they're in a little bit of panic. Look, this Trump guy is unstable. God knows how long he's going to stay in office. We've got elections coming up in 2018, which we might get thrown out on our ass for the giant tax cuts we put into the healthcare plan. So we got to get this done right now. It's our top priority, tax cuts for the rich. Again, there's a twist coming, hold for it. One more. Sources who know Cohn speculate that he'll leave the White House the instant he concludes tax reform is dead. That's amazing, what an amazing admission. Here's the former president of Goldman Sachs, he was just the president, comes over to Trump's cabinet. His only goal is cut the corporate taxes, which would apply to, among other folks, Goldman Sachs. And he says, he's so brazen about it. He's like, look, that's my only job here, is to get a giant sweetheart deal for my company. And if that's not gonna happen, what am I wasting my time here? What, serving the American people? No, I came here to serve Goldman Sachs. And if that doesn't happen, I leave instantly. Amazing. So now, even more amazing is the twist. Get a load of this. Steve Bannon has told colleagues he wants the top income tax bracket to have a 4 in front of it. The top bracket is currently 39.6% for Americans who earn more than $418,400. What? So Steve Bannon wants to raise taxes on the rich. Fascinating. Okay. Now, understand that it's a bit of a trick, and I'll tell you why it's a trick. But it is an awfully clever one, and they won't do it because that's not how Republicans work. But it is a smart move by Bannon. Credit where credit is due. The reason that it's a trick is that it actually won't affect that many people. When they lower taxes on corporations, that's the biggest goodie that their donors want. So they're going to be very happy about that. And then they've lowered taxes on almost everything else, capital gains, dividend, etc., especially pass-through income. For example, Donald Trump doesn't pay any regular income taxes. He only does the pass-through stuff. So if you lower taxes on pass-through, this is not going to affect Donald Trump at all or a lot of his rich friends and allies. So it has great optics, like look at us, you see that? We're not for the rich. We're raising tax on the rich by 10% to nearly 50%. That would be amazing optics for the Republican Party, something they've never done, right? And at the same time, it actually doesn't hit your donors that much. Damn, that's well played. But luckily, the rest of the Republicans are coming in going, hell no, not a dime out of my rich friends' pockets. Their top representative, of course, is Grover Norquist, whose whole job is to protect the rich. So here he is on CNN doing that.
He's not going anywhere. It's a distraction. And it's an unfortunate distraction because it's a cruel joke on middle income people to think that killing their jobs helps them.
Usual stuff of, no, no, you gotta give everything to the rich. If you don't, that's gonna hurt the middle class. It's gonna be very cruel to the middle class. Because you see, in supply side economics, what we do is we give all the money to the rich. That's the redistribution of wealth that we always warn you about. We're just kidding. We do it in reverse. We give all the money to the rich. And then afterwards, it might trickle down on you. Okay, it might. We'll see how that turns out. Actually, it turns out it doesn't. For example, George Bush did $2.1 trillion in tax cuts. That's foregone revenue under George W. Bush. And how'd that work out? Oh yeah, in 8 years, he only created a little bit over 1 million jobs. Whereas Barack Obama, who raised taxes, created 15 million jobs. So that myth about give everything to the rich, give as many tax cuts as you could possibly give to them, and then at the end, that'll create jobs. It's just not true. It's not backed up by any of the facts. But it doesn't matter. Norquist's army and Cohen and Mnuchin and all the rest of the swamp are telling Bannon, don't you dare. Not from our rich friends, not a penny. So Bannon will likely lose this fight, although it is a crafty move on his part. Interesting. Didn't see that coming. Okay. Not often we give credit to Steve Bannon for anything, but it is what it is. You got to give credit to, and I did to Dick Cheney and to Roger Ailes as well for all their crafty maneuvers, which were hideous but effective oftentimes. Okay, now let's go to the next story. So finally, we had a bipartisan bill in the Senate that made some sense, was to block the latest arms deal to Saudi Arabia. It's $510 million of precision-guided missiles. They're using it in Yemen. It's a civil rights catastrophe there, human rights catastrophe in Yemen. Civilians are being killed, and all the human rights groups are speaking out against it. And we're the ones arming the Saudis. And great credit here, not only to Democrats like Chris Murphy, who co-sponsored it, but also the Republicans like Rand Paul, who did. In fact, Murphy says, there's an important message to the Saudis that we are all watching. And if they continue to target civilians, if they continue to stop humanitarian aid from getting into Yemen, this vote will continue to go into the wrong direction for them. So saying we should stop that funding to send them a message. So there's a Democrat, that makes sense. Now, let's go to the Republicans. Senator Paul says, we would stop this evil, that's a strong word, by sending a loud message to the president and a loud message to Saudi Arabia that we are not going to blindly support the arms race. We are not going to be blind to human rights transgressions. That makes a lot of sense. It's bipartisan. We don't want to fund things that are human rights violations. And the Saudis don't poll that well in the country anyway. And we're theoretically in a democracy. So how did the vote turn out? You know where this is going, right? Yeah, no, we lost 47-53. So why is Joe Manchin's face on this story, as you see it next to me on the graphic? Well, it turns out that we had enough votes if all the Democrats voted with a couple of the Republicans like Rand Paul to stop this. But as usual, all the Democrats did not stick together. Just 5 Democrats voted to support the sale. Senators Bill Nelson of Florida, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, there he is, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Mark Warner of Virginia, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana, while 4 Republicans voted against the arms agreement. It's 52-48 in the Senate. If those 4 Republicans switch over, you hold all the Democrats, you block the Saudi arms deal. But 5 Democrats said, nah, when it matters, when there's a vote where we can make a difference, not ones where the Republicans are going to win anyway. Here, the Republicans could have actually lost. Donald Trump could have actually lost. Saudi Arabia and their gross human rights violations in Yemen could have lost. But Joe Manchin was there to stick up for Donald Trump. He would not have that loss. We got to sell those weapons no matter where they drop. Congratulations, those 5 Democrats. So his primary opponent, of course, incensed about this, that's Paula Jean Swearengin. She's a Justice Democrat. He's showing us he doesn't value human life in Appalachia, in America, or other countries. People are dying in the streets and starving in Yemen. How does he sleep at night? West Virginians are tired of dying and starving as a result of his poor leadership, too. Now, that's strong language from a strong candidate. She continues, I'm not surprised because of his history of voting in favor of President Trump, like a Republican. Damn. One last one from Paula Jean Swearengin, running in a primary against Joe Manchin. Senator Manchin voting against the provision to stop the sale. That tells me that Senator Manchin supports giving weapons to a country that is known for harboring terrorists. The weapons could possibly end up in the hands of terrorists. Well, that's a fair point, given that 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudis on 9/11. But even past that, even if you say, oh no, the US government that flew out all those Saudi officials the day after September 11th, genuinely believes the Saudis were not in any way involved. That's why we've done nothing but help them since. Well, how do you counter the fact that there was a definitive report that the insurgency, the Sunni insurgency in Iraq, was funded by the Saudis? They were shooting at our boys over there. Okay, they killed our soldiers in Iraq, the IEDs, etc., funded by the Saudis. That's a report that came out during that insurgency. But nonetheless, we keep sending arms over to Saudi Arabia and other Al-Qaeda affiliated groups, by the way. So let me give Tulsi Gabbard enormous credit here for starting a bill that would actually, very simple, it's called Stop Arming Terrorists Act. Is anybody going to vote against this? And the answer is probably yes. But what we need is more co-sponsors for this, and we need more support for it. So go to now.justdemocrats.com/petition/SATA. That's Stop Aiding America's Enemies. Don't worry, we'll have the link down below for you guys, so you guys can just click on it. Read that whole message there and understand that it makes no sense to send these weapons to radical Sunni extremists and call that some sort of foreign policy strategy. So should we stop arming terrorists? Of course we should. Should we stop giving weapons to Saudi Arabia that then uses it for human rights violations? And God knows where else those weapons go. Of course we should. But there are a number of Democrats who tell you it's really important to vote for corporate Democrats because they could make the difference in the Senate. But yet whenever they do make the difference, it's to help the Republicans and Donald Trump. So go to justdemocrats.com, find out more about Paula Jean Swearengin, and find out how you can support the bill by Tulsi Gabbard to make sure that we stop arming terrorists. Both those links will be below. Okay, so now let me give you one last story here in this first segment. Just a fun little one. So Bill Bennett is a disgraced Republican. Is there any other kind? Anyway, he wrote a book on morality and then admitted that he lost all of his family's money gambling. Okay, I'll just let that sit there for a little while. Look, I know folks who like to gamble, but we didn't lose all of our family money on losing millions of dollars on the slots. Dude, that takes some effort. To be fair to Bill Bennett, he worked hard at losing that money. So he is going after the media and Democrats, of course, and he went on Fox News and he is going to address Nancy Pelosi's statement saying that the press are guardians of our democracy. Oh, Gold. I knew that sneeze was coming, but I finished the sentence. Okay, mission accomplished. Anyway, so let's take a look at the clip from Bill Bennett and see what he had to say.
Free press is an important part of our democracy, but if the bad guys are coming over the wall, who do you want defending you? The staff at CNN or the United States Marine Corps?
That's such a dumb point. Okay. All right. There are different things that contribute to our democracy. That doesn't mean that they are better than Marines at fighting. Like, this is a conversation we're having. Supreme Court, an important part of our democracy, right? I hope so. I hope most of you agree with that, right? Oh, yeah. But what good are they going to do if there's people coming over the wall? So, from now on, only Marines on the Supreme Court. I can go on and on. Really, we're going to be this stupid? So the only ones qualified to say anything are people with guns. Otherwise, you're not really part of our democracy. If you want to be part of our democracy, grab a gun and stand a post. You're goddamn right. I ordered the code red. And they make that point, and on Fox, they're like, "Oh man, that was good. Bill nailed it, man." Let's go play some slots.
You know what? There's two prongs to that means. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have to kill people in order to have democracy. And number two, coming over the wall is based in fear. And coming over the wall is the most scary thing that anyone could ever do. What wall, number one? And number two, why are people coming over the wall? It's just a lack of general knowledge of how things work. Come over the wall, aren't you afraid of them? Kill. That's all democracy is now.
JR, yeah, counterpoint. Have you ever shot anyone coming over a wall? I didn't think so. Doesn't believe in democracy. Okay, I'm just saying, American people have a right to know. Okay, all right. I will give the Marines this. Semper Fi, motherfucker, is an awesome saying. Okay, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you guys.
We're back.
Yes, we are indeed. Speaking of which, I'm back on old school tonight. So we're going to have another extravaganza on old school. It's going to be me, John, Brett Ehrlich, and Michael Schur. Oh my God, if I wasn't on there, that would be the trivia all-star team.
It would actually be.
But I have actually beaten Michael Schur on a couple of trivia contests.
That's true.
So perhaps I deserve a spot on that team.
We haven't had Michael Schur at an actual one of our trivia nights, I don't think.
Oh, so that is wasting talent.
We haven't won in a while.
Well, it's time to bring in Epic Politics, man.
It's been a while.
Okay. Anyway, all the members get all the old school episodes. Look, we got free trial membership for a whole month. You get a whole month free now. If you do that, you can actually go back and watch some of the archives of old school if you missed any of those. And you could watch it live tonight. It is on around 11 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. Okay.
And by the way, the best thing about watching those old schools is you could theoretically watch old episodes of this show, but a lot of it, you know, is time sensitive stuff, but the old school almost never is. Like, an episode you filmed today is just as good a year or 5 years in the future.
No, people go back to the archives and keep finding new stuff in there. They're like, oh my God, look at what you said 3 years ago. That's crazy. Okay, but usually crazy positive. Anyway, check it out. I think you'll like it a lot. So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member, and you get to use promo code FREETYT to get that free month just now. Okay, all right, Jamal writes in, something is trickling down all right, but it ain't money. John Blackman writes in, Dems still think we have Trump because of us not voting for Hillary. We're not voting corporatist next time either. Want unity, move left. Alex writes in, so how does Senator Joe Manchin sleep at night? He dreams about all the checks he'll get. Pablo Leme writes in, on these arms sales, it's not a matter of making sense, just of making a profit. And Rita Ann writes in, some people really believe that democracy equals soldiers in the streets. You're right, Rita Ann, and it is really a shame because, of course, democracy usually means the opposite, that you don't need soldiers in the streets.
Is that from the Bill Bennett quote?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's the stupidest argument I've ever heard in my life. And I had to come up with all these other examples of it.
I just went with Supreme Court and left it there. But
oh yeah,
yeah. But I haven't seen Ruth Bader Ginsburg ever go over a wall.
That's true.
So I don't know what she's doing as part of democracy.
See, I like going the opposite direction. Like, if your wife had a heart attack, would you want a doctor operating on her or the Marines?
Well, here's what I have to say to you, Semper Fi, motherfucker.
If someone had to die for the sins of humanity, would you want it to be Jesus or the Marines?
Marines are always better. Always Marines. Okay,
people are stupid.
All right, what's next, John?
Anyway, let's catch up on some of the crazy stuff that happened while we weren't broadcasting. On Tuesday, North Korea claimed to have carried out, and apparently did carry out, one of its most successful missile tests since back in the 1990s. And in this case, it was the first test of a missile capable of striking, in their words, anywhere in the world, although that part is still up for debate. The US military is saying it's a previously never before seen type of missile called the Hwasong 14. It flew for 37 minutes, traveled about 578 miles. But analysts believe that it could have traveled as far as 4,200 miles if it had been fired with an actual intent to strike a target in case of conflict. And what they mean there is that it was purposefully fired at an elevated altitude that meant it didn't go nearly as far, so there wouldn't have been the chance that many countries would have thought that they were being attacked. But theoretically, it could have. And if that range could actually be reached, then that is technically an intercontinental ballistic missile. It passes that threshold. Now, if it had that range, it couldn't actually hit the vast majority of American states. And so this idea that it could strike anywhere in the world is ridiculous. It's not actually true, but it could strike a number of countries in the region, obviously, you know, South Korea, Japan, which it can already reach with some of its other missiles, but Alaska as well, and some US bases theoretically could be struck by this new type of missile. Now, perhaps more importantly, what could it actually put on one of these missiles? Now, North Korea has claimed that it can put a, in its words, heavy warhead, a nuclear warhead on the missile that could survive the extreme temperature of reentry, which is over 16,000 degrees, by the way. So it's an incredible technological feat to be able to do that. So they say that they can. It's believed that they're lying at this point, that they couldn't actually do that. It would be too heavy, and they don't have the miniaturization technology capable of putting a smaller nuke onto this particular missile. But many analysts believe that within 5 years or so, they will be able to do that. And so for all the limitations and the grandstanding, this is scary. And this is a new threshold that they haven't passed before.
All right, before we get on to Trump's reaction and the disaster that could lead to. First, when they said it could hit anywhere in the world and it went about 500 miles, I thought there was some chance the North Koreans believe that the world is about 500 miles.
Yeah, it's as crazy as believing the world is 5,000 years old.
Yeah, ooh. Anyway. Or that Kim Jong-un does not possess an anus.
We should check.
Okay, I can't.
Just to be sure.
not it. Okay. Anyway, so that's among the crazy. So that's why it's hard to trust the North Koreans, because they put out insane propaganda. That's a real piece of propaganda by the North Koreans, by the way, that he doesn't have an anus.
Yeah.
And that he bowls to 300 every time, or that was his dad, maybe. So it's hard to take them at face value. And I'm with John. I don't think they could put a nuke on it now. But I'm also with John that it is deeply concerning that they're now have ICBMs.
Can I nerd out just a little bit more? Because I mean, look, this is an incredibly scary topic to get into, but it's also technologically incredibly interesting. And the vast majority of people that'll talk about it won't know a damn thing about ICBMs. But one of my favorite stats about ICBMs is that during reentry, if it's of the sort that you know the US uses, it can be traveling upwards of Mach 21, which is 4.5 miles a second. That's incredible. And it makes you think about, like, theoretically, if we can do this, if we can develop something like that, like imagine if we weren't putting all of our best minds into destroying each other, what else we could accomplish. But anyway, also, and this is important, this is a technical nerdy thing, but this particular Hwasong 14 is a liquid fueled missile. It's not believed that North Korea has the capability to do this sort of missile with solid fuel. And the reason that that's important is that solid fuel theoretically can be sort of a component of the missile. You just leave it in the missile. And that means that if some sort of conflict develops, if nuclear war suddenly erupts, you can launch missiles right then. We have that capability. A liquid fueled missile has to be fueled immediately prior to being fired, because the fuel is corrosive. You can't just leave it in the missile. That means that it takes time. You can't respond as quickly to some sort of military conflict. And it also means that during that process, you have to protect the missiles from being seen by satellites, which is difficult in terms of infrastructure and all that. So a few more reasons to be a little bit less scared, but those are technological hurdles that eventually could be overcome.
Yeah, I'm really not convinced that they could hit Alaska. I mean, these guys, as Ben famously says, sometimes have trouble making the toilets flush. So on the other hand, they could definitely, with the missiles they already have, hit South Korea and Japan and cause unbelievable.
That's true.
Life loss.
Yeah.
And the missile that they fire to hit Alaska will probably blow up in the middle and hit Moscow or Helsinki or somewhere else, right? So probably not going in that direction, but you see my point.
Okay. Maybe they're really bad at aim.
You never know with these guys. So it could do untold damage. Yeah. And now let's acknowledge that they apparently, the North Koreans also watched TYT. They were obviously going to go with a Wasikter missile, but they thought that was a little too obvious, so they went Wasong missile.
Yeah, they're still infringing on some copyrights. They're close anyway.
Okay.
So we had some missile tests earlier on this year, and Donald Trump said that if North Korea tests an ICBM, that there will be hell to pay. That weren't his exact words, but he said that there will be consequences. And so they've done it. Our military acknowledges it. Here is his response on Twitter, of course. North Korea has just launched another missile. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life?
Okay, come on. So, first of all, even though I don't like to give credit to Keith Olbermann, I did notice your retweet of him where he was like, dude, you're on Twitter and watch cable news 24/7. So,
seriously.
You know, glass house here. Okay.
Donald Trump is apparently our president, and modern presidential is basically you act as if you're some sort of stereotypical TV sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
And doesn't Trump have anything better to do with your life?
No, if you're a North Korean dictator, you don't actually. This is actually on the top of your priority list.
Yeah.
This is develop missiles that could hit the United States so you could have some sort of effective threat against them.
Yeah.
I think it's a really bad idea, but probably if you're a dictator that runs gulags, probably a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a lot of other things you could do that would be a bigger waste of time.
Yeah, but I just got to remind you, this is the president that people support because he's strong. So, does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. If they do move on North Korea, don't move on her like a bitch. That's all I can say, like Donald Trump's other classic quotes.
China will buy North Korea some furniture, see if that works.
You can get a lot done with some furniture, you know.
Because in those infamous tapes, if you remember, he said he moved on her like a bitch by buying her furniture. This was the anchor. But it didn't work. She was married and wasn't interested in the furniture. I mean, who could have guessed that?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So look,
by the way, I do agree with him that China's playing us. But I said that from the day that Trump met China and thought they were honest actors. So he's like, oh man, their leader told me all about this North Korea situation. Nobody knew North Korea was this complicated.
Yeah.
Right?
So look, and what he's referencing there is that apparently he has some sort of information about trade going up between North Korea and China and says that that's them playing us. I mean, look, theoretically, diplomatically, having increased economic ties between two countries can actually be a good thing because it lowers the chance of some sort of war between them. I doubt we're going to be able to establish that with North Korea, but it's not universally a bad thing in terms of diplomacy. But look, that I know simultaneously, this is the only information we get from Donald Trump is from his Twitter. Most people are trying to say you should never pay attention to anything he says, but we're talking about the possibility of nuclear war. So at some point, we have to use the information that we have. Now, he's not the only person from the US government that responded to the missile test. The general in charge of that region, US forces in that region, is Vincent K. Brooks, who said, "Self-restraint, which is a choice, is all that separates armistice and war. It would be a grave mistake for anyone to believe anything to the contrary," saying that self-restraint is the only thing stopping us from attacking North Korea at this point, which is, I guess, strong. It's also scary. And it came after a military exercise, a joint military exercise between the US and South Korea within 10 miles of the DMZ, where we also fired missiles into the ocean. Apparently, it's a race to see who can fill up the ocean with more missiles. That's how you prove you're a big guy. But look, that's what we're doing. And there is reason to be concerned about what North Korea is doing and whether they can fire a nuke at us today or in 5 years. I would say that 5 years is still within the possible second term of Donald Trump. So that's something to consider during the next election.
Okay, so if he's around for that. Okay, so I agree with him that the correct path is to pressure China. I'm not sure it should be in the form of tweets.
Or in the form of Donald Trump.
Right, and he says, so much for China working with us, but we had to give it a try. Okay. I would much rather that they do that, though, than go to the military option. So yes, agreed. Find a better way, a smarter way to pressure China, because apparently the first time where you just took their word for it was not much of a deal. There wasn't much art to that deal. You were just an idiot who believed the Chinese leader, and of course he didn't do what he promised in that case. Okay.
He said he'd get us good deals.
Yeah.
I trusted him.
Yeah, that's weird.
There's a pretty good chance he thought him tweeting to China to do something about it was doing something. He's like, man, the tweets didn't work. You're crazy how that works. Man, tried it. Guess I don't do anything about it now.
Yeah, we'll see. But the last part of this that's scary is the talk of only thing stopping us from this war is self-restraint. When the guy in charge of our country, not well known for self-restraint.
No.
So that's what scares me about Trump. And I've said it from day one, the issue I'm most concerned about with Donald Trump being in charge is North Korea, because Mike Pence would probably do tax cuts for the rich and would repeal Obamacare and would do all those things that Trump is doing just as much as Trump would. But he probably wouldn't get us into an asinine war with North Korea. He'd get us into a war where his friends would make more money. Yeah. Nobody's making any money from North Korea, everybody's dying. It's a terrible, terrible idea, but the guy in charge doesn't have a lot of self-restraint and doesn't understand any of it. He had to have the Chinese leader explain it to him when he got into office.
Yeah, and look, I tried to, over the weekend I was gone, I tried not to pay too much attention to what was going on, but there were just constant reminders that Donald Trump is not just an ideologue. Look, if you want to have concerns about his mental health, he gives you reasons every single day. We're not going to play the video of him wandering off from the limo, but there are reasons to be concerned about his mental health. And mental health doesn't generally get better as you move through your 70s. So just something to bear in mind.
That limo thing's nothing.
I know it's nothing. I know it's nothing. That's why we're not playing it. I'm just saying, like, his activity, his behavior is not necessarily indicative of someone with a strong mental grounding.
Agreed.
Okay, let's move on. Trump's panel to investigate the mythical voter fraud that he thinks was the only thing that stopped him from winning the popular vote in last year's election is off to a bit of a rough start after requesting a great deal of extremely personal, and in some cases private, voter information from states across the country. 44 states and the District of Columbia have refused to provide certain types of voter information to the Election Integrity Commission, which I don't think we should ever call it that again, because that's ridiculous. It's a complete misnomer. I mean, this organization is being set up. We don't know exactly what sorts of voter suppression it will lead to, but considering that Kris Kobach is chairing it, and he is perhaps the foremost voter suppression expert going around the country and pushing both voter laws and also immigration laws, we know what the goal of this organization is. But we want to show you, because this is, by the way, a vice president put out a statement saying that this is fake news, that states aren't cooperating with us. If you could bring up this graphic from The Nation, it summarizes which states are 100% not complying with the request. You're seeing up at the top, including California and Connecticut, my birthplace and where I now reside, and states that are handing over only publicly available voter data. So this is voter data that theoretically anyone that wants to get that information could apply for and get that information. Some states haven't yet responded, although they have given indication that they will not be going along with it in the end. And so overall, while this sort of request for information, which we're going to get into, is scary, it looks like secretaries of state on both the Republican and the Democratic side are doing the right thing generally so far. Donald Trump doesn't like that, of course, saying numerous states are refusing to give information to the very distinguished voter fraud panel. What are they trying to hide?
Okay.
So he's frustrated.
Well, there's a literal answer to that question. People's private information.
Yeah.
From your grubby little hands.
Yes.
And so we don't know what you're going to do with it when you put the guy in charge of the commission, who is, as John pointed out, literally known as the number one vote suppressor in the country. So Kris Kobach is very well known for not just in his home state, but in other states as well, pushing voter suppression laws.
SB 1070 in Arizona, the big like papers please law, that's a Kris Kobach piece.
Yeah. And so when he says, I'd like to have all the voter data and be able to connect it to their social security and all the other things that I want, yes, people are wary. And Mike Pence, of course, now anytime anybody disagrees with them, they're fake news, right?
Yeah.
The states that refuse to comply at all with this include Tennessee and Mississippi, let alone South Dakota and others.
The governor of Mississippi told them to jump into the Gulf of Mexico.
Like, yeah, that's not fake, that's real, and they're not interested. And by the way, if you believe in states' rights, this is a disaster. Please stop saying you're in favor of states' rights, Republicans. You aren't. Whenever they pass laws on marijuana or euthanasia, or they don't cooperate with your, you know, your Gestapo-like tactics on collecting everybody's private information, I'm sorry, I should say East German, if that makes you feel better, okay? So when they don't cooperate with you on this stuff, it's not fake, it's real, and there's a very, very good reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you pointed out, I mean, it's Republicans and Democrats. And look, if you're a conservative and you're watching this, what would you have thought if Barack Obama had requested this sort of information? Or what would you think if you heard that Erdogan in Turkey was asking for all this information from all the different regions of Turkey? You know, or if Duterte was asking for this information? I mean, you would be scared, and I think that you should be. But let's break down what this information is. We're talking about full names, addresses, dates of birth, political parties, the last four digits of their social security numbers, which you're not supposed to get that information, a list of the elections they voted in since 2006, any felony convictions, information on whether they were registered to vote in other states, their military status, and whether they had lived overseas. I mean, that's a ton of information that can be used to sort of micro-target people in the next election. You theoretically know not only which parties they've typically supported, but which elections they were involved in, which they sat out on. What could that's not a voter fraud thing, okay, to find out that information. It is a voter suppression thing to have and then use that information. That's what's going on here.
Yeah, so to complete the other thought, this is, if you're in favor of states' rights, of course you're gonna be like the state of Mississippi and say, go jump in a lake or in the Gulf, because we're not gonna give you this state information so the federal government can collect it all in some place. So stop pretending on that issue. Now, how could they possibly use this? Well, there's a couple of obvious ways that they could use it. One, they could just use it for political purposes. You think those guys won't then pass on all that information that they find valuable to their own political parties?
Definitely.
Come on. Definitely. Like Mike Pence and Chris Kobach have too much principles to do that? A Donald Trump administration would never? Come on, who in their right mind actually believes that?
I wouldn't trust anyone with that, regardless if you're Republican or Democrat, they shouldn't have that information.
Of course. Would you give it to Hillary Clinton if you were a Republican? No way!
No way!
Neither would I. So that could be just to get out their own vote, to reach voters better. The second part of that is that it could be to block other voters. That's the voter suppression we're talking about. Oh, I have all these felony convictions. Now, the different states have different reasons or different standards for when felons can vote. So some say they can vote right away, some say they can never vote, and there's a great variety. But if you have all the felony convictions, what you could do is you could tell your Republican hatchet men throughout the different states, here's a list of the people we're not going to allow to vote. And yeah, some of them are allowed to vote, but who cares? By the time they adjudicate that, the election will already be over.
Yeah, that's true.
And then let alone why they want to know who's been overseas. What the hell does that have to do with voting that happened in 2016 if this panel is about whether there was voter fraud in 2016?
God only knows.
Yeah, so hell no. Look, I'm going to... This part, now the third part's too conspiratorial, I will grant you that, and very speculative, okay? And you don't need it. So the other parts are why you absolutely should not go along with this, Republican or Democrat. But here's a guy that some of our intelligence agencies believe is working with the Russians. So we're gonna give over all of the most sensitive data we have on voters in a centralized place. And by the way, the first thing they found out when they began this process is one of the places that they were sending people was unsecured. They were sending the data to an unsecured place. So, oops, look at that. The Russians got everybody's data. It was unsecured because of this commission. Oh, golly gee. I don't know. You don't need to believe that to say no on this, but that is also convenient.
Even without that, I mean, look, I think that there are theoretically some other things that are scarier, you know, what they're trying to do with healthcare. The tax plan, possibly some of the environmental moves are theoretically bigger, scarier issues, but they're also getting covered quite a lot. Whereas this, I feel like, is sort of just sliding by without a lot of people really paying attention to it. And theoretically, this is, like money in politics, an issue that affects all other issues. If they can make the next election a sure thing, they will do it. And if they're able to do it, this is theoretically how they would do it, gathering this sort of information and using it in ways that I can't even imagine right now. And so I think people should be much more scared about what this panel could ultimately lead to in our country. And I don't think that people are there yet.
And by the way, guys, last thing for me, you do voter fraud investigation if you lost the election. You don't do it if you won the election. I mean, what a bizarre thing to stir up that hornet's nest if you're Donald Trump. You already won, move on. Yeah. And it's not a matter of Donald Trump just being that stupid that he's just going, maybe in the original tweets where he's like, oh yeah, I would have won. Oh yeah, there was all these millions of fake votes. Oh yeah, all right. That's Donald Trump, I get it. But to put together a commission and to try to get all this information, that isn't just my ego was bruised. I'd like that information having nothing to do with the 2016 elections since I won and you can't redo that anyway.
This sounds less like it's about Donald Trump's ego for once and more like it's about Steve Bannon's electoral strategy. Anyway, we should probably take our last break of the hour.
Yes.
Jump into some other news when we come back.
Like Chris Christie jumped onto the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, zinger! A lot more where that came from when we come back. You'll be full. You'll be stuffed with it. All right, back on the Young Turks. Cenk and John with you. Steve Flinton writes in, I got a free trial membership. I'm watching from a hospital bed here in Ireland. Fabulous care and a low cost. Glad I'm here, not there. I don't know what kind of accent
they know something about healthcare over there.
Yeah. Anyway, hope you feel better, Stephen, but I'm glad you got the free trial membership. That's tytnetwork.com/join and enter the promo code FREETYT to get a free month right now. The Mathemagician writes in, look, North Korea isn't Trump's fault as much as we'd love to blame him for it, but no POTUS has wanted to deal with them for decades. That is true. He did not create that. What I'm afraid of is what he's going to do with it. So he hasn't done anything horrific yet. But once the first missile's launched, the rest follow. Yeah. So it's kind of binary situation that we're worried about.
Briefly lost an aircraft carrier, but he did find it.
That's right.
They found it in the end.
By the way, if you want to talk to us during the show, hashtag TYT Live on Twitter. We also take super chats on YouTube. And the show's, of course, live 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on tytnetwork.com. Last two quick tweets. Other Russert says, because I imagine Trump will advise China to grab North Korea by the Pyongyang. I found that to be very funny. And Control Left writes in, well, if the voter lists do get released, it'll make it much easier for a future Democratic president to move Republicans into FEMA camps. Whatever happened with that?
It's weird.
I taunted after the election for quite some time Republicans. Hey, you were wrong about the FEMA camps. I'm still waiting for that apology.
Yeah.
They never happened. You were full of crap. Totally conspiratorial, totally wrong.
Obama forgot to take all the guns. It was supposed to be the last thing he did before he left office. He forgot. Right. Mm. You gotta set an alarm, man.
Yeah, you gotta do a to-do list.
Damn.
Otherwise you forget. All right, what's
next? I really thought we were gonna get all the guns. Anyway, let's return to healthcare. During this Senate recess, Republicans are doing pretty much everything they can to avoid actually talking with their constituents because they know the conversation will go to healthcare and they know that the Senate healthcare bill is incredibly unpopular. But now they've come up with a way to try to change the conversation a little bit with this ad.
And my view is that the Affordable Care Act has problems. Deductibles are too high. Co-payments are too high. We have to address that.
I've been saying we've got to fix what's broken.
I'm willing to look at replacing, repairing, doing anything that we can to make it better.
For years now, we have said we need to make improvements to the Affordable Care Act, to Obamacare.
There are problems with ACA.
So you've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it, sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world.
The onus also on Democrats, what are they going to do to fix the existing plan?
Right, and they haven't offered any solutions.
Would it be smart for Democrats to offer their own alternatives, their own fixes to Obamacare now and try to bring
Republicans
on board?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
There seems to have been this resistance for Democrats to get more involved.
Do you share part of the burden for a failure to improve Obamacare?
Why aren't you working to fix this rather than just saying no?
Thank you.
Okay.
Where's the plan? Hash brown, where's the plan?
So let's break this down. First of all, the Democrats did have a plan. It was called Obamacare. So that's the thing you're trying to replace now. So it's a weird thing to say, where's your plan to replace your plan? Well, no, we did the Obamacare thing. Okay, so number two, never agree with Republicans on anything because they'll use it in a TV ad. You think you're being reasonable. You say, well, I mean, Obamacare has some issues, right? And they go, aha, got you. So of course that means you break Obamacare's back and you drink its spinal fluid and it's total crap. I got you on tape. Agreeing with me 1% doesn't matter. I'm going to use it against you. You idiot for doing bipartisanship.
If Obamacare doesn't cover everybody, then the only solution is to kick 22 million people off of Obamacare.
Yes.
Duh.
Hello, McFly. Number three, that's why guys like Manchin are so hurtful to the cause. The other guys that they quoted were either trying to be reasonable or there's a third thing that I'm going to explain in a second. For the guys like Manchin, he helps Republicans with their talking points. That's part of his role. Yeah. I'm pretending to be a Democrat, but whenever the Republicans need somebody to go on TV and say they're awesome and we suck, Joe Manchin's your guy. Yeah. Vote Paula Jean Swearengin, JusticeDemocrats.com. Anyway, now most importantly, the guy that they quoted the most there was Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And he says, don't you need your own plan? He says, that's a very good point. And then they cut him off. But
don't you think that's embarrassing that Bernie didn't have an answer? He just said, you have a good point. And then I have to assume that was it. That's embarrassing, Cenk.
John, you're going to be shocked to find out Bernie Sanders does have a plan.
What?
And he has introduced it.
No, I just watched the video. He said you have a good point, and then his face wasn't on the video anymore.
Yeah. So Bernie Sanders, of course, is in favor of Medicare for all. Elizabeth Warren has also said she's in favor of single payer. And so it's not true that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren that were throughout that video don't have a plan. They definitively have a plan. But they put them in the video anyway, because one side of the political equation just doesn't care about lying or misleading people at all. And that's why it drives me crazy that those mainstream media people in those, they actually take Republican talking points printed by the RNC and read them on air to Democrats. Well, don't you guys need a plan to destroy your earlier plan? Okay, oh, but you have one. Oh, Senator Sanders, you have a plan. Well, I don't know. I'm going to question you on air as if you don't have one anyway, so this can go in a Republican ad.
I think it was interesting that in this Republican ad, they were using so many of those fake news purveyors in the first place. Weird how all of a sudden you like the questions they're asking. And yeah, look, there's obviously the various forms of single payer that you could put forward. There's Medicare for all that a lot of Democrats are talking about now. So theoretically, if you wanted to be able to point to a plan, that's a pretty easy way to do that. Oh, but they also, I mean, they tweeted, if we could bring up one of the tweets, like, you know, our healthcare system is collapsing, which isn't actually true. But where's their plan? And then specifically, they then go forward in this next tweet.
And they show Bernie Sanders.
They show Bernie Sanders, who has
the plan. He's the one that introduced the plan.
Yeah. And then, where's your plan, Hillary Clinton? Because like some other people, they think that the election still hasn't happened, and they're still obsessed about Hillary Clinton. I'm not sure why. So Hillary Clinton even responded and forwarded and put the link to her healthcare plan, which I don't think is anywhere near as good as something like Medicare for All, but it's a plan. Not to mention the fact that there's various, you could increase subsidies to further drive down the cost of health insurance. You could provide some sort of public option to allow more people to be covered. These are things that are being debated that other Democrats have put forward. But also back, you know, before the election, do you remember who was in control of the Senate? If the Democrats had tried to do something, would it have gotten through? No, of course it wouldn't have gotten through the Senate. So this is just BS from top to bottom, from roof to floor. This is all BS. And of course, it's just going to be played uncritically, and their followers are going to love it.
Yeah, and media, stop with the false equivalencies. So the insane point that they're making, specifically with Hillary Clinton, who I have no love for, is, well, Donald Trump won the election, and the Republicans control the White House, the House, and the Senate.
And
so it's obviously Hillary Clinton's fault that the Republicans can't pass a healthcare plan.
Yeah.
We're entertaining that insane point. That's a conversation we're supposed to have some sort of equivalency on.
Or it's on her to put forward a plan when she's in the woods. She's nothing now. Get over Hillary Clinton. She's probably doing a lot of fundraising, and she comes up every once in a while and says something super annoying. That's what she does. That describes a lot of people in this country now. Yeah, it's when the stakes are as high as they are, it's incredibly frustrating. When they put forward this ad saying, we want to solve it, we want to fix this problem, don't pay attention to the CBO saying so many people lose their health insurance, don't worry about that. It's the Democrats that don't have a solution. While Republicans are literally saying now, including Mike Lee and Donald Trump, saying, you know what, fine, if we can't pass this plan, we just repeal it, we don't even replace it right now. And you're putting yourself forward as the group that's trying to fix the problems, and you're literally saying, screw everybody that got health insurance under Obamacare. They're all getting thrown off. You think 22 million is a lot of people? Wait until we show you repeal with no replacement. But they're putting forward this ad, and a lot more people are going to see that ad than see Mike Lee pushing for repeal with no replacement.
Yeah. It's like if I pass the Getting Money Out of Politics amendment, and then they ask me, where's your plan to destroy that amendment? I don't even fucking have one, because I like that fucking amendment. That's why I fought for a decade to get it. What kind of insane system are we? Again, it's all the media's fault, because they entertain this bullshit. They just do. Like, if they're fake in any way, it's in their bullshit equivalencies that drive me nuts.
Well, I want to be fair, so I have to ask the tough question of the person who has no ability to pass legislation right now.
I want to ask the tough questions written to me by the RNC and handed to me as a fucking memo here at CNN. Anyway.
Sorry, small point that also happens. When they ask them, why don't you do this? Something's wrong with Obamacare, why don't you fix it? The first answer should be, well, when we were passing it in the first place, we allowed the people who were looking to disrupt and destroy it to add things to it and gave control to governors and people in different parts of the country to take it down whichever way they wanted to, so it could have problems with it. So they could say, look what he did to destroy your health care, when their whole purpose was to destroy this health care plan and never get it to a good point to where it can actually work.
And besides which, I don't accept anything. So when they say, oh, Obamacare, everybody agrees that Obamacare is a disaster. No. Everybody does not agree.
The CBO doesn't agree.
I don't agree. No, it has its issues, but it is not a disaster. It is way better than what it was, the system was before, and it is literally tripling the Republican proposal in popularity. So if you think Obamacare has a problem, wait till you get a little Republican proposal. Why don't you turn the question around and say, hey, Republicans, the American people despise your plan.
Yeah.
They despise it. So why do you continue on this reckless path that is clearly undemocratic?
Yeah. They have come up with a plan that is the only thing in the country nearly as unpopular as Chris Christie.
Okay.
So which we can transition into this. Anyway. Okay. Chris Christie is currently polling at around a 15% approval, which is not only really bad, it's actually the worst a governor has ever polled as long as they've been tracking it in terms of approval. And we're talking about some governors that at the end were under criminal investigation, still had approval ratings higher than Chris Christie. But despite that, he has found a way to possibly drive his approval rating even lower. And it started with a recent government shutdown in New Jersey, which of course led to certain services being shut down. Now, one of them is the Island Beach State Park. The entrance was closed Saturday, July 1st. Because of the shutdown, which means that people could not access that state park. Well, actually, that's wrong. It's not that people can't access it. It's non-Chris Christie people can't access it. Because if you go to this photo, you're going to see that journalists got in a plane and flew over. If you could jump to P1. And flew over the beach and happened to say, oh my God, who is that? Well, that is Chris Christie and his immediate family and friends.
Oh, loving that's it. My favorite picture right there.
That's the... So look at that beautiful shot of almost the entire beach not being occupied except by Chris Christie.
Well, even Edward Snowden tweeted about, like, this is the perfect example of, you know, what's happening with our government today.
Yeah.
Where it's only for the elite.
It's only
for
them.
And no one else is allowed on the beach, which of course that makes them even happier. There's no riffraff and masses around them.
Yeah, exactly. Masses. Anyway, so a lot of people obviously having a lot of fun with this. If we could go to this picture, you're going to see a nice sandcastle that was made in his image there. And then also there was one writer, if we could jump to the next one. This had like over 70,000 likes. It's his book is being read, and for some reason they chose to blur out the crotch, which even if there's no nudity, when you blur it out, makes it seem kind of dirty. And so
he photoshopped the book in, by the way.
Photoshopped the book in, yes. He wasn't actually reading the book. So look, this would be bad enough, but the attempt to deceive the public makes it even worse. And so Chris Christie, later that same day, this past weekend, had a news conference. And at that news conference, Christie was asked if he got any sun Sunday. He said, I didn't get any sun today. When later told of the photo that we just showed you, Brian Murray, the governor's spokesman, said, yes, the government was on the beach briefly today, talking to his wife and family before heading to the office. He did not get any sun. He had a baseball hat on.
Ugh.
And by talking to his wife and family briefly, he meant lounging in a chair in beach wear, soaking up the sun and enjoying himself.
That's one of my favorite lies, though. No, I wasn't out in the sun. Oh, you have pictures? I had a baseball hat on.
Dude,
and flippers.
You have flip-flops on. You have flip-flops. Oh my God, that photo when they show that nobody can go on there is just amazing. By the way, my favorite take on this is probably from Tony Poznanski, who said, Chris Christie closing the beach to the public and only opening it for himself is the most real-life Cartman South Park thing ever. Which is totally true. And yeah, and my takeaway was this, very similar to what you said, that a lot of politicians have always considered themselves to be better and more powerful and more above the regular man. But there seems to be an increasing belief that there is nothing they can do that can hurt themselves. No matter how arrogant, no matter how cruel, no matter how tone deaf, they are better than you and they are going to exercise that. They're not going to hide it anymore. Doesn't matter if you put a journalist in a plane to take photos, because when he was confronted with the truth of this, he said specifically, if you want these sorts of privileges, run and become governor. He literally said that, okay? He's better than you because he became governor. And if you want to show him, you just need to beat him in the next election.
So he has a couple of residences, the governor of New Jersey. One is in Princeton and the other one is the one that you were looking at there. So his literal quote was, well, I'm sorry, they're not the governor. So the
good to be king.
Yeah, so the governor gets to shut down the beach and use it just for himself. That's not supposed to be one of the privileges of being governor.
Yeah.
So yes, you get that residence, I get that. That's not the conversation we're having. We're not saying never go to that residence.
Yeah.
We're saying if you don't allow anyone else on the beach, perhaps you should live by the same laws as the rest of us.
Exactly.
But to him, he's brazen. He says, this is a residence. We have a residence in Princeton as well. And that place is a place where people can go and tour. But if the government is closed, but they can't if the government is closed, am I supposed to move out and stay in a hotel? That's the way it goes. Run for governor and you could have the residence.
This is Donald Trump behavior. This is spend 20% of your presidency on the golf course behavior. Like imagine if we had President Sanders, imagine if Sanders was the governor of New Jersey. Do you think he'd be lounging on the beach there? No. He would say, okay, look, the state is obviously at a crisis right now. We've got a government shut down. I'm not going to be having fun at the beach. I'm going to be working to resolve this crisis and fix things for the people of New Jersey. That's how you show leadership, not by putting on your flip-flops and a hat and soaking up the sun on a New Jersey beach. But they're not in it to solve actual problems. They're in it for the privileges, the benefits, and the power.
And just a couple of weeks ago when they asked him about his disastrous approval ratings, and by the way, to be fair, I read that he was the fourth least popular governor in US history.
I read most popular since they've been, I'll look it up. Yeah?
Fourth most or most, number one.
I apologize if I'm fake news.
If he's in fact number four, he's trying real hard to get to number one, so don't say that he's not working hard.
Okay.
And they didn't allow Cub Scouts into that to a state park at the same time. But to be fair, those Cub Scouts, they were governors. They want to get into the state park. They should have just been governors, you know what I'm saying? And a couple of weeks ago, Chris Christie said, when asked about those approval numbers, he's like, who cares? I'm not running again. Not, the people that I'm supposed to represent are dissatisfied with me. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. It's who cares? There's nothing in it for me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're out of time. John Iadarola, thank you. Everybody check out youtube.com/thinktank. And when we come back, the story that I am most, well, the funniest and the one that's got me most enraged. The funniest one is what Republicans thought the Declaration of Independence was. You're gonna love that story. Okay. And then the CNN blackmail, so-called blackmail story has actually got me pretty pissed. So all that when we return.